Okay, tonight is Tuesday, April 24th. This is the normal Wednesday women's Gemara Shir. Tomorrow, due to NORPAC, moved it up to tonight.
Okay, Rabotai. Last week in Chulin, we learned, we studied the sugya of Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. So I'm just going to briefly review it, because there are people here who were not here last week, and everything today. No, it was in the. It was okay. They don't. Are you on the? Are you on the? Really? So call the office and ask a reminder to put you on the list. Because they sent it out on Friday, and then on the Tuesday. You know, the Tuesday thing. It's part of the midweek report. And it was part of the weekly brief also. Yeah. Today it was an email. Yeah, it was the first thing in the midweek brief. Yes, this week.
Last week I got a separate email.
Okay. From now on, just tell people the call. So anyhow. Last week was the Yom, I couldn't give a Wednesday, and that was Yom HaTzmaut. Tomorrow I'm going on NORPAC, so it was either canceling the share or okay. Okay.
We're just upset because we love the share.
Okay. So let me just briefly review, and then tonight we're going to focus on the three exceptions to the rule which the Gemara posited last week. The Gemara discussed the issue. It was found in two locations in Chulin of Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. That if somebody is about to engage in a transgression, and then a situation occurs, and there are multiple transgressions that he would violate, not just one, but two. So the question is, do we recognize the fact that you can compound something that is prohibited and compound it with another prohibition? Can we say that an isur, something that is prohibited, is added on, chal, is compounded upon something that was already prohibited? So if you did that particular item, Bishogeg, for example, without recognizing that it was prohibited, you would have to bring two korbanot chatat. If you did it deliberately, then you would get 78 lashes. You get 39 lashes for transgressing each violation of the Torah. And if you ate something that is now usur for two reasons, under those circumstances, I would now violate two things. And I'll give you the example which the Gemara cited. The Torah tells us in Parshat Vayishlach that we are not permitted to eat the sciatic nerve, Gid Hanasheh. Okay? Every animal is born with a Gid Hanasheh. Every single four-legged animal has one. So the minute this animal is born, it has a section of the animal that you're not allowed to eat. Good. Now, I slaughtered this animal, and I slaughtered it improperly. Or I shot it. Or I did something else to it. Put it to sleep. What does this animal now become?
A nevela.
Nevela, exactly. Nevela is an animal that dies from anything but a kosher shechita. So now this sciatic nerve could be prohibited unto me for two reasons. Number one, it is the Gid Hanasheh. Number two, it comes from an animal like any other part of the animal that was what? A nevela. So the question is, do I compound prohibitions or not? Or do we say no? Once something is prohibited, it cannot be prohibited for a second reason. That would be Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. You cannot compound one on top of the other. So In effect, like everything in Jewish law, I trained you already. There's a machloikus about it. But here, the overwhelming majority of Talmudic opinion is Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. That you cannot compound one prohibition against the next. You cannot. Fine. This debate is not only in relationship to that which you can eat and that which you cannot eat. It also affected situations of kahuna. You had a woman, a kohen, for example, is not permitted to marry four classes of women. A woman who is a zona, a chalala, a grusha, and if he's a kohen gadol, an almana. So what we defined what a zona was. It's not a prostitute the way it's translated today. It's a woman who's had relations with someone who she is not permitted to have relations with. That makes her halachically, based on the Torah, a zona. Then, so now, can the kohen marry this woman? No, he cannot. He cannot marry her. Then, this woman got married to somebody else, a Yisrael, who she's allowed to marry, and she got divorced from this man. Now, another Kohen wants to marry her. So there are two potential reasons why this Kohen should not marry her. Number one, she was a Zona. And number two, she's now a Grusha. She's now a Grusha. But if you hold Ein Isur Chal Al Isur, the only reason why we would stop this Kohen to marry this woman is not because she is a divorced woman, but because of her prior status. She had relations with someone who is prohibited to have relations with her. She is a category of a Zona. So again, we don't compound one Isur on top of the next. That was the principle, and we saw lots of different types of examples of it. Tonight, we're going to learn the three exceptions to the rule. These three exceptions are again subjected to Talmudic debate, but the overwhelming majority of Tanaim and Amoraim believe that in these three cases are the exceptions to the rule, and we will compound one prohibition against the next. One prohibition against the next. So I'm going to show you each examples of each category. First, I will define them. I'll define them. And then give you an illustration of each. So the first exception to the rule is an Isur Mosif. Isur Mosif. If the second prohibition adds something above and beyond that which the first prohibition did not have. It includes more people, it's a broader scope. So if it's an exact replica type of prohibition, one does not compound. But if the second one is an Isur Mosif, or an Isur Bivat Achat, they both, Bivat Achat means at one time, they both apply at the exact same second. So the illustration that I gave you 5 minutes ago, does the prohibition of Gid HaNasheh and the prohibition of Nevela happen simultaneously? No, it doesn't.
No.
That's why we say Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. But if you have two Averot or four Averot that will actually take place at the very same time, under those circumstances we say that they both apply. That they both apply. That's called Bivat Achat. So we have an Isur Mosif. It adds, it expands the category. It includes something that the first one didn't include. Bevat Achat is that two of them come simultaneously at the exact same time. That's what simultaneously means. At the exact same time. And the third category is an Isur Kolel. Kaf, Vav, Lamed, Lamed, Kolel. That it doesn't add another prohibition. It doesn't expand. I'll give the examples are easier for me to, instead of a definition, because it looks very much like Isur Mosif. So let's leave the third one for a definition for the example itself. So we're going to start with Bivat Achat. Bivat Achat. This is a Gemara in Masechet Yivamot. In a most bizarre case, like many of the cases in the Talmud, Shnayim Shekidshu, Shtei Nashim. Two people were standing in the same room right next to each other, and they each betrothed a woman. There were witnesses who saw, take out a ring, and give her and say, Hareyat Mekudeshetli. Very nice. Now, as you well know, in the time of the Mishnah, the wedding did not take place at the same time as the engagement. In our day and age, halachic engagement takes place under the chuppah. What we announce our engagement has no halachic significance whatsoever. But in the time of the Talmud, you used to give a ring in the presence of two witnesses and then prepare for the wedding. If you want to terminate a halachic engagement, you need a get. You need a get. To terminate our American engagement, you don't need a get, you just walk away and that's it. But that's what happened at that time. Now, apparently, either the chasan or the kala went to the wrong wedding. They both set their chuppah dates for the same day, for the same hour, and chasan A went to kala B's wedding. And Chasan B went to Kala A's wedding. And he has no clue that this is the wrong woman who he's supposed to get married to. So that's what's happening. Listen to this. Shnayim Shekidshu Shtei Nashim. This case was thought of on Shavuos night when they were staying up all night. So you know, it was already 3:30 in the morning. And Ubishaat Knisatan L'chupah, as they were about to enter the chuppah, hechlifu zeh shel zeh lo zeh, ve'et shel zeh lo zeh. They swapped colors. So guy number two is marrying woman number one, and guy number one is marrying woman number two. Okay, fine. Problem is, they didn't realize it even after the chuppah. And now they go home and have relations for the first time. They still don't know what's going on. Right. So, what? Says the Mishnah, Hare Elu Chayavin Mishum Eshes Ish. They are obviously committing adultery, both of them. Because since they were halachically engaged, that makes the wife an Ashes Ish, even though she has not yet undergone the chuppah. That's the halacha. As I said, we don't notice it today because we do halachic engagement at the wedding. At the wedding. V'im hayu'achin, if these two brothers who are marrying these two people happen to have been brothers, not only did they sleep and have relations with what? A married woman. They also violated something else. They had relations with their sister-in-law, Eshes Ach. And this week's Parsha, the Torah says, Ervat Eshes Achicha Lo Tegaleh. So, how did this guy and this woman violate both prohibitions? Or when did When did the prohibition of both of them take place? When was the... At the same time when they what? When they consummated the marriage. That's when they both violated both prohibitions. So that is called Bivat Achat.
There were four at
once. So under these circumstances, the penalty for both would be, well, we're assuming that this was a mistake, so they would have to bring not one Korban Chatat in the Beit HaMikdash, but two Korbanot Chataot. Both prohibitions would take effect. The fact that he married he had relations with a married woman. Two, he had relations with his sister-in-law. And that's biblically prohibited. So since both of them take place at the exact same second, this is an illustration of violating two prohibitions that take place at the same time. And then the Mishnah actually says, "Im hayu nidot mishum nita." You can make it that it would be three prohibitions. If both of them happened to have been at the wrong time of the month, where they could not have marital relations with a man, not even their husband, they would violate three things and would require three korbanot chatat, even though they are little different prohibitions. But since the prohibitions take place at the exact same second, therefore they are all are in effect. In fact, on page number 2, one of the Balei HaTosfos explains the rationale why I say that you have to hold this person, both man and woman, accountable for this. And Tosfot says, part of a longer discussion, Aval, I bracketed the relevant lines, Aval kishibaim biyachad, when prohibition A and prohibition B come biyachad at the same time, kigon, eshet ish, the eshet ach, chayiv shtayim, you're obligated to bring, if it was b'shogeg, two chataot. Why? Dehei minayhu mafkit. If you wanted to stick to your guns and say you cannot compound one on top of the others, I will ask you, hey minayhu, which one of the two are you going to exempt him from and say you don't have to worry about that one? Which of the two? Ve'im tomar, and if you should say, Kol she'eino bazeh acharzeh, eino bivat achat. If you wanted to say that you can only prosecute somebody if they what? Come following one another. But if they happen at the same time, no. Im kein lo yachul echod mehen. Since I don't know which of the two to eliminate, what will be the net result? I'll eliminate both of them. V'yiyeh patur. And then this person who had relations with that woman would be exempt from either prohibition. Eilu heim divrei badut. These are words of stupidity. And the halacha can't be stupid. So if the halacha can't be stupid, simply by process of not being capable of eliminating one of the two, we have no choice but to saddle both prohibitions upon you at this time. Therefore, if you have isur bivat acha, under those circumstances, we now claim that both of them take place, and you would, if it's b'shogeg tu chataot, if it is b'mezit with a death penalty, you'd be chay of death twice, whatever that means, death twice. It's a little difficult to die twice, but you'd be chay of twice. Another example of this is another unusually strange case. Yes.
In that last case,
case, it's just that's random how that's how it came up. Because you didn't need the two people.
Correct.
And the same with just one person who slept with someone who was an Asha Ish, who's this Asha Ba.
That's correct.
It just that happens to be where it rose.
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Right.
And any time
it's Aishas Ach,
it's
Aishas Ish. Every Aishas Ach is Aishas Ish.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be. Because Aishas Ach, let's assume the brother dies.
Right.
You're not allowed to marry the wife, so she doesn't have to be an Aishas Ish. It still could be Aishas Achicha. The only one of the lengthy list of Arayot that is permissible after the prohibiting agent dies is two sisters.
Your wife's sister.
Your right. You're allowed to marry your wife's sister after.
After
your wife dies. You're now allowed to marry two sisters concurrently at the same time. But all of the other prohibitions, somebody wants to marry his father's wife, even if it's not his mother. It says, Eishes Avicha lo tegale. Now let him marry your father's wife. So even if one's father dies, you're still not allowed to marry that woman. But she's not an Eishes Ish any longer. It's just Erbas Ich. So the Gemara wanted this case, this bizarre, because it wanted to get you not only for Eishes Achicha, but for Eishes Ish. If she was still married and you had relations, of course you would violate both, no doubt. The Gemara in Chulin, on Daf Mem Amud Bet, gives another, again, bizarre case. Case is somebody who slaughters an animal, a korban, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and he has in mind that he's slaughtering it Lashem Avodah Zarah, for idolatrous practices. So this guy's a real winner. Hashochet Chatat B'Shabbat B'Chutz La avoidus kachavim. This guy takes an animal and designates it as his korban chatas. Why is he designating this as his korban chatas? Because he engaged in a transgression. So you think that what's this guy going to do when he engages in a transgression? He's going to do tshuva. So not only does he not do tshuva, he takes the animal and he slaughters it outside of the framework of the Beit HaMikdash. That's one thing. Shchutei Chutz. That's in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Achleimos as well. And he did it on Shabbos, where you're not allowed to shecht. And he had in mind to slaughter it L'Avodah Zarah. To slaughter it L'Avodah Zarah. So, under those circumstances, three prohibitions come about at the same time. At the act of slaughtering, three prohibitions. He was Mechal Shabbos, he was Oved Avodah Zarah, and he slaughtered a korban outside the street of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah.
How could you be Oved Avodah Zarah B'Shogeg, where he has to offer
a chatzah? I didn't know that you're... No, he's...
He has to bring a chatzah.
That's correct. He didn't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu prohibited Avodah Zarah. Never heard of it.
But he knows enough to bring a korban and have it slaughtered.
Yeah, that's something else that I learned in the first grade.
But, that's also
but I never learned Avodah Zarah.
It's true. Korbanos in those times were obvious. Everyone knew that.
What?
You told us before, in those days when you had to bring karma, that yeah. was obvious. Like,
right.
Knew that.
He just didn't know. It's hard to imagine, but the Gemara, the Torah talks about Avodah Zarah B'Shogeg. The Torah talks about it. Parsha Shlach. Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard to imagine a Jew doesn't know that he's not allowed to shecht l'avodah zarah. Yeah. You know, he could have had a different definition of avodah zarah. Could have said, shechting it, I'm slaughtering this in honor of my God, or of a, you know, it's not that he's denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can have various forms. There is shituf also. If you believed in our God and another God, that's also avodah zarah. Yeah. So, what? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or a third illustration on page number 4. The Gemara asks, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. I'm not interested in the locale. I'm just listed in the reference to our topic. My isur bevas achas ikahacha. Answer. Zar sheshimesh b'shabbos. A non-Kohen came into the Beit HaMikdash and was going to slaughter the Korban Musa for Shabbos. A non-Kohen who walks into the Beis HaMikdash and he's going to do the Avodah in the Beit HaMikdash. And you know what else happened? The Aiti Shtei Sa'arot B'Shabbos. So now here's what's happening. Listen carefully. If a person is a Zar, a non-Kohen, when does that prohibition start? Does it only start on a Shabbos?
No, it starts when he's born.
When he's born. Good. So let's assume he's born on a Tuesday. He is now a Tuesday. He's a Zar. Very nice. Now, but let's not worry about a minor, okay? Let's assume this person becomes a Bar Mitzvah when he's on a Tuesday. Now it comes Shabbos, and he walks into the Beit HaMikdash, and he's going to slaughter the Korban. Is this Bivat Achat or not?
No.
Why not?
Because that one comes Tuesday and this is Shabbos.
Good. The prohibition to serve as a non-Kohen started on Tuesday. Therefore, the Gemara, for a reason which is not relevant to us, says, you know when he became Bar Mitzvah?
Shabbos.
On Shabbos. So the way the minute Shabbos started is when he became an adult. So that now he, as an adult, is not permitted to slaughter a korban in the Beit HaMikdash. And now that he became an adult today, what else is he not allowed to do? Not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. And when did both Isurim come upon him?
When Shabbos
started. Exactly. When Shabbos started. The Gemara doesn't talk about Shabbos starting. The Gemara talks about the technical way you prove that you're an adult. Two pubic hairs. That's what it says. Shtei sa'arot. So he produced two pubic hairs on Saturday morning. And then, he's going running into the Beis HaMikdash to slaughter a korban. Puts on the big day kahuna and everything. He's having fun. So again, the principle is quite clear. All of these double prohibitions occur simultaneously. Therefore, you are held responsible for both of them.
So, my question, as I think I've asked before, is: so why these all seem very comparable? Why are we giving more than one example?
Okay, that would be necessary for me to go through the sugya.
I'm saying, are there slight differences that they're trying to pull?
No. It's just that in the context of that sugya, they sort of this case. In the context of that sugya, they spoke about that case. So, depends what the topic happens to be. In Yevamot, they were talking about prohibited relationships in the whole parak. That's why they took that one. Yeah. Now I'm going to give you an example of Isur Mosif. Not that it happened to Vatacha, but an Isur Mosif, where it's an addition as a result of applying to people. Isur Mosif Itle. Almana Asura Lekohen Gadol, Visharia Lekohen Hedyot. Okay? You have a woman who is going to marry a Kohen. She is already a Grusha. Okay? She's already in a Grusha. Also, she got married to somebody, she got divorced, now a Kohen wants to marry her. Very nice. But, let's make it a real fancy case. Okay? This guy, Kohen, has his eyes on this woman. Fine. So, he takes her out on a date, even though she's married, takes her out on a date. So, Finally, she gets divorced. Okay, she gets divorced. Now she wants to marry this Kohen. But somebody talks her out of it and says, you know what, you're not allowed to marry a Kohen. Okay, fine. She gets married to somebody else, and her husband dies. Now she's an Alman.
She's also a Grusha.
And a Grusha. Good. And now you know who wants to marry her? The Kohen Gadol wants to marry her. So how many violations will this Kohen Gadol have? Two. Not just one. Now, why is it that that both of these are going to apply? Because the prohibition of almanah is a more expanded one. It includes not only a Kohen regular, but who else does it include? A Kohen Gadol. It includes a Kohen Gadol. So listen to this. Hold on. Even if... Yeah. So in this particular case, since the category includes one other person, even if I could have created that the almana and the grusha took place simultaneously, or it can't take place simultaneously. You can't be a grusha and almana at the exact same time. So here, why is it that the second prohibition applies to the Kohen Gadol? Why? Because his category of prohibition is more expansive than what? Than that of a Grusha. A Grusha, everybody is prohibited to marry. An Almana, only a Kohen Gadol is obligated to stay away from. So since Almana includes one other person in this world in terms of setting up a prohibited relationship, that's the Kohen Gadol, hence Almana will be compounded upon what? Gerusha. Because the category of Almana is not the same as Grusha. If there was no difference, let's assume both of them were limited only to a Kohen Hedyot. So now we would have to see, do they take place at the same time or whatever it is. But here we don't have to worry about that. Since the category of Aveira number 2 includes another person, that makes this prohibition somewhat more expansive than Gerusha, and hence, having married her, he will violate two things. Almana and Gerusha. That's example number one. Example number one. Take a look at page number 7 for a minute. Number 7. And I'll tell you to look at the following. Yeah. Good. I want you to look at the end of the second line, and it's talking about a piece of chalev, prohibited fat. Are we allowed to eat a piece of prohibited fat? No. Torah tells us most of the fat of an animal has to be trimmed, and it winds up on the Mizbeach, in the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah tells us to be makriv, the chalavim, and the klayot. The kidneys and the fat are parts of the carbon that go on the Mizbeah. So the Gemara says, Chelev me'ikara Lo asur ela ba'achila. Chalev is only prohibited in eating it. I'm allowed to sell prohibited fat and make a lot of money on it. What could it be used for? I have no idea. Now, what did I do? Akdishe. I sanctified it. How did I sanctify it? I made a statement. This fat I am donating to the Beit HaMikdash. What happens when you donate anything to the Beit HaMikdash? What does the Beit HaMikdash do with it? They have an auction and they sell it. And once you sell it, the money is used by the Beit HaMikdash for a paint job, for any repairs of the Beit HaMikdash. But until it's redeemed, not only are you not allowed to eat it, let's assume I would take something that can be eaten. Like the fat, in theory, could be eaten. How many people used to make grievin? My mother used to make it all the time, fried fat.
Very, very long time ago.
Yes, because we weren't healthy at that time.
But
exactly, it's the gvaldi.
Erev
Pesach, my mother used to make that all the time.
Grieve
it. Now it's considered healthy?
Yes. Very good fats. Read fats.
Really? Okay. Okay. So somebody donated fat to the Beit HaMikdash. Not only am I not allowed to eat it any longer, I am not allowed to derive any benefit from it.
You should be stealing, right?
Because that's stealing from the Beit HaMikdash. So now I ate this fat. How many violations will I be held accountable for?
Two.
Why? I will, first of all, I have eaten chalev, and that came first. But if the hekdesh was only prohibited to be eaten, I would say ein isur chalal isur. If chalev was, if when I makdish something to the Beit HaMikdash, the only thing that it would be included is that you can't eat it, but you're allowed to sell it, under those circumstances, I would not get lashes for eating something, stealing something from the Beit HaMikdash if I ate it. Because I would say, ein isur chal al isur. But since the second prohibition includes not only an isur achila, but an isur hana'ah, says the Gemara in line 3, migu di itosif be isura dahana'ah, itosif be legabe chalev. So now, when this chalev is eaten by me, not only will I be held accountable for eating chalev, I will be held accountable for eating something from the Beit HaMikdash. Because it's an isur mosif. Mosif, the second prohibition, adds another component to the prohibition. It's not a replica of number one. Number one is only prohibited to be eaten. So under those circumstances where you have a hosafa to HaKadosh, Gavoa means HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I generate an additional element of the component, under those circumstances, I now generate a second dimension to the prohibition. Hence, I'm held accountable for eating something that belonged to the Mikdash and Chalev. Last week we gave the case about cooking Chalev with Basa B'chalav. I cooked fat in milk. So Chalev is just Asur and Achila. But now that I cook it with milk, it's not only Asur B'achila, it's Asur B'hana as well. So the Isur of Basa B'chalav will take effect on the Isur of Chalev. Yeah. K Category number three is called an Isur Kolel. Isur Kolel. And I'm going to start with the example on page number 9, which is a tshuva of the Rashba. I have to introduce one of the most fundamental principles of Nidarim. This is the most important principle in Maseches Nidarim. Okay? I can say the following thing, trying to prohibit the exact same thing in two different ways. I can take a shvua. I will never use this tape recorder again. Second way, this tape recorder is asur to me. This tape recorder is asur to me. So, in case number one, who did I create the prohibition upon? Upon the person. In case number two,
on the tape recorder.
On the object, exactly. So now, here is going to be the case. Listen carefully. If I used the Lashon of a Shvuah, I swear I'm never going to use this. Then I swear again. I swear I'm never going to what? Use this tape recorder again. How many Shavuot will be upon me? How many times, and then I used it. I'm using it right now. How many violations will I have violated going forward, having said that statement twice?
Only once.
One, yeah. You know why? Because you can't compound one on top of the other. A shvua is one. Ein isur chal al isur. So what do you think the case which the Rashba is going to be? Exactly. I didn't use the exact same language both times. I used once the language of a shvua and once the language of a neder. So I said, I will never use this tape recorder again. 5 minutes later, I say, this tape recorder shall be considered unto me like a korban. So what do I mean by a korban? Am I allowed to derive benefit from a korban? No. So too, I'm not allowed to derive benefit from what? From this tape recorder. So since this second vow includes something that was not included in the first vow. The first vow, who was prohibited? Just me. But the tape recorder wasn't prohibited. I couldn't use this tape recorder, but there was nothing of Isur on this tape recorder. But the minute I now formulate it in the second time around, tape recorder zeh Asur Olai, something else has been created. Not only am I under a prohibition, the item becomes totally Asur. Under those circumstances, I apply Isur Chal Al Isur. Because it's Kolel, it includes now something else that is prohibited that was not prohibited in the first formulation. In the first formulation, there is not an object in the world that has any restrictions on it. It's I, the user, have restrictions on it. But, I can actually place restrictions on this. If this belonged to me, I can say, no, this is usur to everybody. This tape recorder is usur upon all of the people in this room. I have the right to say that. I can create an isur for all of you. But if I just say, I'm going to stay away from this, I can't impose that will upon you. I can't take an oath. I am prohibiting you from using this tape recorder. I can't say that.
If you say both statements, that I will not use this, then this is custom to everybody.
Then both apply. I have a shvua upon me, right, and a neder. And if I violate it, I'll violate the prohibition of neder as well as that of shvua. Because it included something that was not included in the prohibition first time around. So this is an illustration of an Isur Kolel. An Isur Kolel. Yeah. So in each of these examples, something was added above and beyond the original formulation. In the principle that we started with, you can't compound one isur upon another isur. And that's the halacha. Ein isur chal al isur. However, if the second prohibition is either bevat achat, coming at the same time, the logic of the Tosfos Rid, who said that if they're both at the same time, I don't have anything in my ability to say A should be violated or B should be violated. Well, if you're going to say don't hold you accountable for either of them, that is stupidity. So in the absence of stupidity, I have to claim that you violate both of them. Two, an os isur mosif, it adds another dimension to the prohibition. It adds an isur hana'ah to the prohibition, whereas the first one was just an isur achila. And number three, an isur kolel, where something is included in the prohibition that did not that was not included through the first prohibition. Classic example, shvua and neder. Shvua and neder. I'll give you another famous example of that. Somebody eats on Yom Kippur, I think I mentioned this last week, eats non-kosher food on Yom Kippur. Okay? So non-kosher food on Yom Kippur. So,
is that two violations?
Okay, is it two? The answer is it is two violations. Even though the non-kosher aspect preceded Yom Kippur. It's not Bevat Achat. It became Trefa meat, Nevela meat, 5 days before Yom Kippur. So why is the person obligated for eating Trefa or Nevela and Yom Kippur? Because on Yom Kippur, the prohibition includes other items. Besides eating non-kosher meat, what else are you not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur?
Any food.
So Yom Kippur kolel yoter ma'achalim. So once the second prohibition is more expansive than the first only prohibits trefa or nevela or chele. Now when I eat that on Yom Kippur, even though it's not the same time, the Isur of Yom Kippur does not include an Isur Hana'ah, it's just an Isur Achila. So why does the second one apply? Because it's a more expansive prohibition. It and its prohibition includes more articles besides the trefa meat, besides the nevela. Therefore, this person eating non-kosher meat on Yom Kippur has to do tshuva for two things, nevela and for eating on Yom Kippur. Yes?
Why isn't that sort of seat?
Because it's not mosif anything in terms of the level of what's prohibited. It's just an isur achila. Mosif means that it brings something to a heightened aveira. The first prohibition was only asur b'achila. The second prohibition is also asur b'hanah. Here, achila and chila are on the same level. Yes.
What about, I don't understand the time frame, because the prohibition isn't just because something's not kosher, it's because you ate the non-kosher.
Correct.
In and of itself, having a non-kosher meat hanging around somewhere is not a prohibition.
No, but so the article is prohibited.
But it's triggered by you eating it.
So correct.
At the same time that you're eating Yom Kippur, you're triggering...
No, that's what Bevat Achat means. That Bevat Achat means the creation of the Isur has to happen simultaneously. Not your violation.
Not your
violation. Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. So these are the three exceptions to the rule. Three exceptions to the rule. And this, again, there are exceptions. Some people think that there are no exceptions to the rule. That all of these three exceptions are not true. But they, again, are in the minority. And the way the halacha is coded in the Rambam is that ein isur chal al isur, but if it's an isur bevat achat, or isur kolel, or isur mosif, under those circumstances, the second one is applicable as well, and you would have to worry about having violated all two or even perhaps three prohibitions.
Is the point of knowing that for the punishments or what carbonate you have to bring?
Yes, that's the reason.
You have the total disregard.
Correct.
Another disregard.
Correct. So the question is, when you finally come to your senses and recognize, I want to do tshuva, what do I have to do tshuva about?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
It's a personal accounting as well.
It's a personal accounting, and what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to hold you for your ledger. Yes.
If
you were to marry her?
Like if the Kohen was to marry a Zona and there would...
And she was what else?
No.
She's just a Zona?
Yeah.
That's only one prohibition.
That's only one prohibition. Even if there's two reasons that he wasn't allowed to marry.
What would be the second reason?
I don't know.
If you can't think of the case, you're not talking about Isur Chal Al Isur. When this whole discussion for the last 2 weeks is that with one action, there were multiple violations. Multiple. The question is, can you be held accountable only for one or for both? But if you don't come up with multiple violations, we're talking about something else completely.
So in other words, the reason is not that you look at the reason, it's like you look at the number of violations.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah, just the number, don't forget, if somebody does it b'mezid, what do you have to have before violating? A warning. So you have to know what you're warning them about. So if it's just one prohibition, or let's say it's two, but ein isur chal al isur, so you don't have to worry about it. Just give them one warning. If you hold isur chal al isur and you want to hold them accountable for both, you have to warn them for both of them. Hey, buddy, the action that you're about to do is going to violate A and B. If it's going to be isur chal al isur b'mezid, you'd have to be warned for both, in order to get lashes for both. Yeah.
Bevat Achat is only about time?
Yes, it means Bevat. Yes, that's correct.
Like if Shemitah started on Shabbos and then you went out and started plowing on Shabbos, that would be a Bevat Achat case?
If Rosh Hashanah came out on Shabbos?
No,
yes,
Shabbos.
That would be Bevat Achat. Shemitah and Shabbos took place. The prohibition against plowing on that day is the day in which both Isurim took place. But if Shemitah was a Tuesday and now it's Shabbos, Shemitah preceded. That's correct. All right, we'll stop here. We'll continue next Wednesday night, regular night. Next Wednesday night is a good night. That's right, Wednesday. And we'll back into Chulin.